final hour, Darren, Donick, and Chase here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Switch gears. Talk a little hockey. Our buddy Scott Burnside from The Athletic does a great job covering the league. Scott, how you doing?
I'm doing very well. Thanks for having me aboard. And I'm actually at a hockey rink, so you may hear the odd puck hitting the glass and just to create, you know, just I'm sure you're missing that sound of, you know, the rink ambiance. So there you go.
Oh, yeah, we would never say that we want to hear those. We welcome those sounds. That would be great. Perfect in the background. Let's start with round two has started. Let's start with the first game that we took in Saturday night. Stars and Avalanche on the big national platform of NBC. Got to be honest, a little eye-opening on how the Stars look. They really took it to the Avalanche. Grubauer goes down. I was watching live when that happened. I realize he got injured in the regular season. How do you think that's going to affect them? They've already ruled him out. How do you think that's going to affect them moving forward?
Yeah, it's fascinating. I mean, and, you know, part of the, you know, I don't know whether it's a problem, but it's certainly the reality of this playoff season and how it's unfolded is that, you know, with the game so late on the, out of the Edmonton bubble, those games start at, you know, 9:45 Central or 10:45 Eastern. Man, sometimes you feel like you miss some of the stuff. And I think maybe people might have missed where Dallas was, you know, how they got to where they are right now in terms of knocking off Calgary in six games and now facing a Colorado team that, that probably on paper is much stronger. But your point's a great one because though Grubauer went down, it doesn't sound like they expect him back any time. Pavel Francouz, I've just learned to say that properly, by the way, is a guy that will be unknown to, you know, to lots of hockey fans. I've talked to a couple of goaltending, former goaltenders and analysts. They say he's the real deal. Now, I thought he looked a little shaky coming in relief, maybe expected, after Grubauer went down. But I do think that Francouz is going to give the Avs very solid goaltending. And it does set an interesting matchup because, of course, Ben Bishop has not been seen for days with the Dallas Stars. So it's Anton Khudobin carrying the load for the Stars. So it really is a battle of the backups. And good for the Stars to get off to an early victory there. You know, they don't match up depth-wise probably offensively. But, man, they've got lots of interesting pieces. And I think, you know, a guy like Joe Pavelski who came in the offseason has a ton of experience. Corey Perry, of course, former Stanley Cup winner and one of the league's great agitators. Of course, Preds fans will remember him fondly or less fondly maybe from playoff series in the past. But the Stars have a lot of sand, and I think this series is going to be fascinating. I don't think it's going to be over anytime soon. Plus, you get the bonus of maybe two of the brightest young defensive stars in the NHL, like Miro Heiskanen of the Stars and Cale Makar of the Avs. Those guys are going to carry the water for both those teams for many years to come. And I can expect you'll see them in Norris Trophy debates for a long time, maybe starting as early as next season.
Yeah, unfortunately, they're in the Predators division, so we've had a good look at those guys. So they're no surprise to us. I'm going to hit you. I'm going to come out of left field with this one. And I probably shouldn't use a baseball reference when talking hockey. But if I were to put you on the spot here and say today, Scott Burnside, if you could draft, if you could have one player in the league and start up your franchise, I had this discussion over the weekend. This is why I'm bringing it up, and I'm curious to know where you go with this. Who would the player be and why if you were to start up a franchise today and take their body work? It's today. It's not what they've done. It's not their resume. It's today and moving forward. What would be your answer?
Yeah, it's a great question. And it would be hard to go away from either Connor McDavid or Nathan MacKinnon, you know, given just where they are, to me, they're 1-2 in terms of the NHL centers at, you know, current level of play and given their, you know, experience, they're still both pretty young. But I'll tell you, I think when you look at some of the young defensemen in the NHL, I watch Victor Hedman. Now, he's not young, and so maybe he might be a little bit older than you would want. And I'm hedging by naming, like, 20 different guys before I give you one. But I would tell you, you know what? I might go out on the edge, since this is a left field question. You know the guy that's most impressed me so far through the first round and a little bit of the second round? Is Seth Jones. And, you know, he's not going to win the Norris this year. I think Roman Yossi's got that locked up, and John Carlson is going to finish second. That would be my guess. I'm trying to think where Seth Jones ended up on my ballot. Top five for sure. But just the way he played against Toronto and then in just an incredible five-game series against Tampa. It felt like he went 13 games. But Seth Jones is a guy I would want all day long. I just love his personality. I love how he plays. He's an extraordinary athlete, and he's an extraordinary young defenseman. So I'm gonna filter my way around, and I'm coming back to Seth Jones. That's where I'm starting right now.
Okay. See, that's why I think it's a fascinating question. I had a buddy of mine pose that to me, and we had a really interesting discussion on that because I think there's a lot of places you could go. I told him I thought most people would say Connor McDavid because he's kind of got, you know, the recognition, and that's where people tend to gravitate. Obviously, you know, Roman Yossi here, you know, boy, he, you know, there's none better. He should win the Norris, because he is the best defenseman. I get it, we're a little biased, but there's Seth Jones is fantastic. He's a younger guy, so I could get that. But I went with, I mean, I know he's not good. He's great. I get it. I already knew he's great. I think I've just watched more closely than maybe I ever have. And Nathan MacKinnon is just ridiculous. I just think he is just an unstoppable force. And so I gave my reasons on why I would start with MacKinnon. I just would. I would build a franchise around him. I just think he just does whatever he wants to do. He blows me away. Like I said, I already knew he was great, but I've focused on him a little bit more. And I'm like, gosh, he's just ridiculously great. So that was my answer.
Yeah, well, and listen, there's no way you can go wrong with that. And you know, for me, it's the way, there's a personality about these players too, right? It's not just the raw skill, but it's also, it's been interesting watching Miro Heiskanen too, just how, you know, that Dallas Stars team has become his team. MacKinnon is the abs, right? Everything feeds from him. So those are the kinds of players you want, right? Those are the cornerstone players that if you're an NHL coach and GM, that's who you want in your locker room. Guys want to play with guys like Nathan MacKinnon. They want to play well. They want to, you know, they want to be around him, guys like that. So I don't think you can go wrong at all with Nathan MacKinnon. And, you know, it's going to be interesting. Even this is the first bit of adversity for the Avs this year, and the expectations are extremely high. Like, I still think it's likely maybe that you see a Vegas-Colorado West final, and man, how much fun would that be? But if the Avs are going to get there, they're going to get there on the back of Nathan MacKinnon. So I applaud your decision. I don't think you shouldn't be ashamed of that.
Yeah, I'm not ashamed. I have even more respect for him. Like I said, just watch him a little bit closer. I just think there's times when he just does. I feel like he does whatever he wants to do out there, and that's so incredibly hard to do at this level.
Well, yes, and then I think, you know, again, it's he's a player that's interesting because, you know, that it came out of that terrific draft class and a lot of discussion about, you know, where, you know, would they go with Seth Jones, you know, given his connection to the community, and it took him. I'm trying to think, was 2 or 3 years? Like, it wasn't an instant thing for Nathan MacKinnon because that franchise was going through some upheaval. You know, Patrick Roy was there, and then he left. And, you know, there was some, it was kind of like, well, I don't know. Is he really going to be all that? But he did, you know, he get it. He gets it. He worked at it very diligently. And you'll see now this is a franchise that should be, you know, they should be in the Stanley Cup hunt now every year for the next 5 or 6 years because he's that good.
Talking to Scott Burnside from The Athletic. Scott, I don't know if I've ever seen in any sport an agent do anything close to what I saw Alan Walsh do with the post of the picture with the sword in the back. That was so bizarre. What did you make of that? I thought Marc-Andre Fleury said all the right things, handled about as well as he could, but what was he thinking?
I got to tell you, I would look at that picture every single day for the rest of my life because it's so, you're right. I mean, it just is no, it does defy description. It defies words in some ways. And it's, listen, I don't know how big a deal it is. And listen, I watched closely that Vegas Vancouver game, just because you wonder, okay, you know, what will happen? A, because it's two interesting teams, very talented, but you're also wondering in the fallout from Alan Walsh's tweet with the sword, and it's not just the bloody sword; it's the bloody sword with Pete DeBoer's name on it, the head coach.
Yes,
and jammed through Marc-Andre Fleury's back. You just wondered if there would be some sort of evidence that it was unsettling somehow to the team or to Robin Leonard, who got the start again last night for the Golden Knights. And of course, there wasn't any of that. Golden Knights dominated a really good Vancouver team. Leonard pitches a shutout. It's like, okay, it doesn't, you know, like it doesn't really matter. And I think that's probably the best possible outcome for Marc-Andre Fleury, for Robin Leonard, for the Golden Knights, pretty much everyone but Vancouver. And I expect it will go away very quickly. I did talk to a number of people. Listen, Alan Walsh is very, you know, he's a very big personality within the agents world. He has never been shy about saying what he's thought. He's been very critical of the NHL during work stoppages. He's fiercely loyal, obviously, to his clients, loves to tweet when they're doing well. If he feels they're being mistreated, he's also not shy to say that. You know, the timing, I don't really get it. And I'd like to think that Marc-Andre Fleury had no idea that this was coming. Because if he knew it was coming, that's kind of lousy, right? Like if he knew that this was the plan. Because at this stage of the playoffs, what's the last thing that you want as a team is to have this kind of potential distraction and disruption. Now, it doesn't look like it's going to be an issue there if Marc-Andre Fleury gets to play at some point, and I imagine he will, given the back-to-backs in the playoff schedule now in the bubble cities. You know, you hope that he rises to the occasion. All of my dealings with Marc-Andre Fleury have been extremely positive. He is one of the most loved players I've ever come across. Loved him in Pittsburgh. They love him in Vegas. He's the face of that franchise. I get that he's disappointed that he's not playing every night, but you're right. It was off the charts. And, you know, if they go on and win a Stanley Cup, it'll be an interesting footnote. But I will always look at that picture and go, wow, that was one crazy Sunday afternoon.
He put Fleury in a terrible position. And Fleury, like you said, is such a class act. He was able to smooth it over and not add fuel to the fire. I do wonder, Scott, the picture aside, when they traded for Robin Leonard, did they have a mindset that Leonard could challenge and maybe even take the job from Fleury? When they made that trade, my thought was at the time, this is just insurance because Fleury has been such an overworked goalie in this day and time. At his age, they never felt good about the backups that they had for him. And so I thought it made sense from that standpoint. But did you think that they were envisioning this possibility, that Leonard could actually be a better option for them in the playoffs?
Yeah, absolutely. I don't have any doubt about that. And I think you're right on the, you hit the nail right on the head. Listen, you know, a year ago, I felt they should have got goaltending depth or support at the trade deadline a year ago. It didn't happen. This is not a slight against Malcolm Subban, who, you know, showed at times that maybe he was ready to be a viable NHL backup. But Marc-Andre Fleury played too much. He got hurt towards the end of last regular season, came back, was never quite the same, wasn't quite good enough in the first round, that chaotic first round against San Jose that ended in, oh, I want to say double overtime in Game 7, but certainly in the controversial Game 7 in overtime. He was never quite good enough. And there were moments this year where, again, his play was not as we've expected from Marc-Andre Fleury, and they really didn't have a plan B. So, and when Robin Leonard got there, I talked to a number of people who watched that team closely, and, you know, when we got back to return to play and training camp, and there were a lot of people who were like, if they're going straight on who is playing the best right now, it's Robin Leonard. And I think the fact that Pete DeBoer, who came from San Jose to Vegas mid-season when Gerard Gallant was shockingly fired by the Golden Knights, again, he's got no loyalty to Marc-Andre Fleury, in the way that he doesn't have loyalty to anyone else in that roster except the ones that are going to give them the best chance to win, right? Like, if Gerard Gallant was still there, maybe they go to a different goaltender to start the playoffs. Maybe Marc-Andre Fleury starts because it's Marc-Andre Fleury and this is his team and took them to the final in 18. Pete DeBoer doesn't have that history or that baggage. He started the best goalie he had in front of him in his own mind, and it's hard to argue with those results right now. So I'm not really surprised that we've come to this point.
Scott, your colleague, Katie Strang at The Athletic, a very eloquent opinion piece on Mike Milbury that we had said a lot of the same things right, the same day that she put that out. Do you think this is the end of Mike Milbury at NBC?
Yeah, it's interesting. And listen, I've known Katie a long time. We've worked together at ESPN. She is an absolute marvel. And if you haven't read her column about Mike Milbury's comments, you should go and do that right now. And it is, it's hard to imagine that he could come back from this. And, it's disappointing. And the worst part is it's probably not the worst thing he said this playoff year, right? An offhand comment about the lack of fans at women's hockey games and, just stuff that there's no place for it now. And thank goodness, it took some time, didn't happen right away, but I'm glad that NBC, I'm glad that the NHL, there was a response to it, and the fact that, Mike Milbury, walked away or was pushed away out of the Toronto bubble is absolutely the right call. And it is hard to imagine him coming back and rejoining that panel. And, it is time to move on, right? It's time to have people on there that don't think that way. That think in a broader, in a more purposeful and positive way. I don't think there's a room for those kind of people anywhere, and certainly not on a national broadcast like NBC as a national U.S. partner to the National Hockey League. So I can't imagine a scenario under which he comes back.
We're talking to Scott Burnside of The Athletic here on Darren Donick and Chase. Wanted to get your opinion on what you think John Hines might do with his coaching staff. It was announced last week Dan Muse, an assistant, will not be brought back. His contract will not be renewed. We know there are some names available. There are some connections to Hines from New Jersey. But how do you think he shapes his coaching staff now that he'll have a full offseason? Well, a weird offseason, but a full offseason in training camp to put it all together.
Yeah, I don't really have a sense for what John will be looking for. I do know, I've been reading some of the stories and the comments around the Predators about what has to happen. And listen, that's 2 years in a row where you watch them in the playoffs, and really does seem like a team that has lost its way, that has lost its identity, and it goes back to, I know David Poile has talked about this. This is a team that for years and years, when they were successful, it was because they had an identity of working hard and being, never being out-prepared, never being outworked. And that has gone away. It just has. And so if that means finding, members to augment or complement your coaching staff that allow you to get back to that identity, I think that's important. I mean, so the bottom line is, though, you can talk about identity, you can have the coaching staff that you want, implement the systems, but if the players can't play that way, and it seems right now that this lineup, the way it's constituted right now, is going to struggle to play that way, then that's hard. That's going to be a hard track to follow. So, I wonder, and certainly if you're a Preds fan, you hope that you can find a way back to that identity, and it does start at the top, and it starts with coaching and systems, all those kinds of things, but you do have to have people who buy in, and right now I think you have to ask yourself whether you've got a lineup that really buys into wanting to play that hard to have the kind of success that this team deserves.
The Capitals have shown Todd Reirden the door after a couple of seasons, so how much egg do they have on their face after Barry Trotz wins them the Stanley Cup? They ultimately can't come to an agreement. He goes to the Islanders, and then they get knocked out by the Islanders and Reardon is out of a job. What do you make of that whole situation?
Yeah, I mean, it's a, certainly a great backstory to that series. And if you watch the very brief moment when Todd Reardon and Barry Trotz interact after the end of game five, it's clear that, you know, that there may still be some lingering hard feelings or whatever. And, you know, you have to go back and like, I understood why all of what happened in Washington in 2017-18, why it happened and how it happened. I think Barry Trotz had decided he was going to be somewhere else regardless of what happened at the end of that 18 season. In fact, they won a Stanley Cup and he walked away days after is, I it's easy to blame the Capitals. Why didn't you keep him? You know, they have their own structure. They have their reasons why they didn't extend Barry Trotz before that season. They have a budget. They couldn't come to an agreement with Barry Trotz. You know, in hindsight, should they have paid him whatever that he wanted to be paid and given him the term that he wanted for security for his family? Well, sure, in hindsight, probably should have done that. But I understand why they did what they did. I understand why Barry went where he went, and the success there has been obvious. So, this is a Caps team now that, you know, that's two straight seasons, one and done. This is window time, right? The window now, you know, is very much inching closed on a great team that won a Stanley Cup. You'll never take that away from them. But, man, there have been a lot of missteps along the way for such a talented organization, and it will be interesting to see who comes in there next. I would not be surprised if it's a guy like Peter Laviolette, because they want someone who has an edge to him, to his style and to his personality, who's one who can coach high-end veteran teams. Mike Babcock's name is out there, Gerard Gallant. But I think Peter Laviolette might be a nice fit there.
Good stuff as always, Scott. Really appreciate it. Mm-hmm. You continue to be safe, and we will talk to you down the road.
Anytime, guys.
Scott Burnside, you can go find his work at The Athletic. He covers the National Hockey League. When we come back, we will recap our round one picks, because round one is in the books. Did we get better from the qualifying rounds? Some did. Yeah, actually, we all did. We all got better.
Not to say it wasn't that bad.
No, it was better.
There was nowhere to go but up for a couple of us.
Well, yeah, that's true. That's kind of where I was going with that. You know, there's two of us. There was nowhere to go but up, really. And we'll also make our round two picks. Yes, the round two has started, but we did lock ours in over the weekend via text, so we'll make it official on air because we did make our picks before everything started Saturday night. We'll do that on the other side. Darren Donick and Chase, ESPN 102.5 The Game.